It's strange how I used to enjoy the cold, but as my breath escaped in ragged, glowing plumes, blooming into a thick frost fog before the industrial LEDs, I checked my watch. 1:13 a.m. Down here, the mercury hovered in a dead zone between negative 10 degrees and zero, a temperature that didn't just chill you, it tried to claim you. Above me, the steel scaffolding rose like the skeleton of a dead cathedral, labeled with faded alphanumeric codes that felt more like tombstone coordinates than involuntary markers. The ceiling was lost in a hazy gloom, hidden behind the rhythmic, bone-deep thrum of the massive cooling units. It was a constant, mechanical heartbeat. Occasionally, the vibration shook loose a dusting of frost, sending a ghostly, faux snowfall drifting through the beams of light.
"God damn it, Travis. The hell are you doing?"
The voice belongs to Bo, the night crew's oldest relic. It cut through the mechanical hum like a jagged blade.
"Sorry, Mr. Bo. Hit a patch of black ice."
Travis called back. He was a young buck, still eager, still wearing that new guy coat of sweat that I knew would eventually freeze into resentment.
"Travis, I told you to stop calling me mister. I'm your co-worker, not your goddamn priest. Now get these pigs off the floor before they freeze to the concrete. I'm on it."
I let out a short, dry scoff. Their bickering was the only thing that kept the silence from feeling too heavy. I turned my attention back to the inventory list, the paper stiff and brittle in my gloved hands. Night shift in a frozen tomb. It was peaceful, in a lonely sort of way. Bo lumbered over, his heavy boots crunching on the frost, and delivered a solid thwack to my shoulder blade.
"We still got that truck coming around four?"
"Should be,"
I said, my voice sounding thin in the vast space. Bo grunted in acknowledgement and shuffled off toward the loading docks, his silhouette swallowed by the silver haze of the freezer. I stayed put. My world shrank down to the size of a plastic cupboard and a dying ballpoint pen. Section 4-G, frozen corn, 100 crates. I clicked the pen. It took three tries for the ink to thaw enough to leave a jagged mark on the page. I moved to the next panel, the soles of my boots making a rhythmic tack, tack, tack against the concrete. It was a sound I'd heard 10,000 times, a metronome for a life spent in a box. I began to count. It was mindless work, the kind that turned your brain into mush. You don't see the food. You see the cardboard. You see the plastic wrap. You see the little black barcodes that looked like prison bars. I tapped each crate with a gloved finger. My nose began to prickle, the hairs inside freezing into tiny needles. I wiped a stray drip from my lip with the back of my hand, barely feeling the skin. Travis was scraping the spilled peas into a plastic bin. The scritch scrape of his plastic shovel was the only thing breaking the oppressive drone of the cooling fans. I reached the end of the road, marked the sheet, and moved 6 inches to the left to start the next stack. My breath puffed out in a steady, hypnotic rhythm. It was a loop. Check the code, count the stack, mark the sheet, move the feet. It was a labor of seconds that felt like hours. A slow-motion existence where the most exciting thing that happened was the occasional flickering of a fluorescent bulb overhead. The hum of the coolers shifted an octave, a mechanical sigh that vibrated through my boot heels, and then settled back into its flat, industrial moan, same as it did every 20 minutes. I glanced down at my wrist again. 1:13 a.m. The digital display was frozen, literally or figuratively. I couldn't tell. I tapped the glass with a gloved thumb, but the numbers remained stubbornly stagnant. Before the thought could fully form, Bo's heavy tread crunched toward me through the frost.
"All right, so what's left on the to-do list before the day crew rolls in?"
I opened my mouth to answer, the words sitting on the tip of my tongue, when the world simply vanished. It wasn't a flicker or a dimming. It was a total, aggressive erasure. The massive humming of the coolers cut out instantly, leaving a silence so absolute it made my ears ring. For 5 seconds, we weren't in a warehouse. We were in a lightless space. Then, with a violent mechanical cough, the backup generator lurched to life. The coolers groaned back to their labor, and the overheads were replaced by the clinical, flickering orange glow of the emergency lights. They didn't illuminate the warehouse. They just carved shallow, amber tunnels into the darkness, casting long, distorted shadows of the scaffolding that stretched like spindly fingers across the floor.
Well, ain't that a bitch? Bo's voice drifted out of the gloom, flat and unimpressed.
The storm, maybe?
I asked, my voice sounding unbelievably loud in the newly cleared silence.
Maybe, but you know the drill. I'll trot on over to the office and try to get a hold of the boss, see if he wants us to sit tight or start hauling. Go find Travis before the idiot cracks his skull open on a pallet jack.
I nodded, though I realized Bo was little more than a smudge of darkness against the orange haze. He turned, his boots scuffing away into the shadows. I headed the opposite way, my hand outstretched, fingers skimming the cold, corrugated steel of the shelving to guide me. Every few feet, I passed through a pool of orange light and into a pocket of black, where the only thing I could see was the gray cloud of my own breath.
Travis, where the hell are you?
I threw my voice into the cavernous dark, but the warehouse swallowed it whole. There was no echoing bravado, just the flat thud of sound hitting isolation. Scritch, scrape, he didn't answer. I followed the noise, my hand trailing along the freezing steel beams. The orange emergency light above me flickered, struggling to stay alive, casting a strobe-like jitter over the floor. I stepped forward, in my boot, labored with a sickening, wet crunch. I looked down. A sea of green pearls lay scattered across the concrete, half mashed into a frozen paste. I had reached the spill. I looked up, squinting into the throat of the aisle where the amber light died and the black began. The scraping sound had stopped the moment my boot hit the ice. The silence that rushed back in was deafening.
Travis?
I whispered this time. The shovel was there, leaning haphazardly against a stack of frozen poultry, its blue plastic edge gleaming in the dim light, but the handle was slick with a dark, viscous frost that didn't look like ice. There was no Travis, no heavy breathing, no shuffling boots, no young buck apologies. I stood, frozen, my eyes straining against the gloom until they ached. He had to be right there. The sound hadn't been an echo. It had been local, tactile, present. Maybe he'd ghosted away the second he realized he didn't need to keep cleaning, retreating into the dark like a startled animal. But Travis wasn't the quiet type. He was clumsy, all heavy boots and nervous energy. He shouldn't have been able to vanish into silence. I turned back toward the aisle, my heart hammering a frantic rhythm against my ribs. Then, I saw it. Far down the row, where the amber glow of the emergency light frayed into nothingness, something shifted. It wasn't a horizontal movement. No one was walking away. It was vertical. A shape, darker than the surrounding dark, hitched itself upward. It was a heavy, fluid motion, the silhouette flowing up the side of the steel scaffolding like oil climbing a wick. A violent shiver casted itself down my spine, rattling my bones. I tried to swallow, but my throat felt like it was lined with glass. I told myself it was the flickering LEDs. I told myself the backup generator was struggling, causing the shadows to dance and stretch in ways they shouldn't. But my body knew better. My teeth began to chatter, a tiny, frantic click, click sound. I clamped my jaw shut, trying to stifle the sound, but the cold was no longer just an environmental factor. It felt like the temperature in the aisle had plummeted another 20 degrees in a heartbeat, a localized, predatory frost that settled in the marrow of my teeth. I shook my head violently, trying to force my mind to trick itself, make it believe I didn't see anything. But I acted like a fool. I walked forward. I figured Travis must have worked his way to the office. So I moved through the dark as best I could, hoping I would hear Bo's raspy voice boom out from somewhere. The only sound was the heavy coolers above me, and my own boots. My mind must have been messing with me, stitching together random shadows and the flickering of dying bulbs into a monster that didn't exist. I was a grown man, jumping at ghosts in a glorified refrigerator. I forced one foot in front of the other, stepping away from the spilled peas and the abandoned shovel. He's probably there now, leaning against Bo's desk, laughing about how the new guy got spooked by a blackout. I moved through the darkness, my pace quickening. I kept my eyes fixed straight ahead, refusing to look up at the steel spires or the dark gaps between the pallets. I was listening for Bo. I wanted that raspy, tobacco-stained voice to boom out from the gloom, to call me an idiot, to break the spell of this suffocating silence. But the warehouse offered nothing. The only sound was the monolithic thrum of the coolers, a sound that instantly felt like white noise, but now felt like a shroud muffling the world. My boots struck on concrete with a flat, lonely thud, the sound echoing upward and losing itself in the high, frozen rafters. The further I walked, the further away the office felt. In the orange-tinted haze, the aisles seemed to stretch. The perspective warping into the familiar path felt like an endless gauntlet. I realized I hadn't heard Bo's boots in a long time. I hadn't heard the distant clang of a door, just the coolers and the rhythmic puffing of my own breath.
Rick, is that you?
The voice cracked the silence from a few aisles over. It was Travis, high-pitched, frantic, and breathless, exactly how the kid sounded when he was panicking.
Travis?
I exhaled. The tension in my shoulders dropped so fast, it felt like a physical weight falling off me.
Where the hell have you been? I was getting worried about you.
I'm back here.
The voice replied. It was muffled, coming from behind a wall of stacked crates. I started toward the sound. My feet moved on autopilot, fueled by the desperate human need to not be alone in the dark anymore.
I'm coming. Just stay put. Don't touch anything till Bo gets back.
Hurry, Rick. It's cold. It's so cold.
I was 10 feet from the gap in the pallets when I slowed down. My brain, clouded by the freezing fog and the adrenaline, finally caught a snag in the rhythm.
Travis?
I called out.
Yeah, Rick. I'm right here. Just around the corner. Come see.
I stopped dead. Travis was from the heart of the Ozarks. He didn't just speak. He sang in a slow, molasses-thick drawl. He called me a Ricky, even when I told him not to. He chewed his vowels like they were pieces of gristle. The voice that just spoke to me was flat. It was simple. It was a perfect recording of Travis's pitch and tone, but it lacked the soul. It didn't have the southern tilt. It said Rick with a sharp, cold syllable. The stillness was a physical agony. I felt like a wire stretched to the snapping point. My boots, usually so heavy and clumsy, felt like leaden weights as I eased my heel back, then my toe, feeling for the concrete. I didn't turn. I didn't dare show it my back. The thing on the other side of the crates shifted. It was a dry, papery sound, the sound of a spider moving through dead leaves that amplified to the size of a man. It knew the game had changed. The pretense of being Travis was rotting away, replaced by something much more efficient. I stepped back into the shadow of the next aisle, the orange light barely reaching the tops of my boots. Above me, the plastic shrink wrap on the higher pallets began to strain. Something was putting its weight on the top-tier shelving, the steel groaning under a burden it wasn't designed to hold.
Rick!
The voice chirped. It was Travis's pitch, but the inflection was all wrong now. It was a question asked by something testing a new language.
Mr. Ball. Rick. Mr. Rick.
It was cycling through sounds. It was a fisher throwing lures into a dark pond, waiting for a ripple. The sound of my own teeth chattering was played back to me, but it was amplified, echoing off the corrugated walls until it sounded like 1,000 tiny hammers hitting the eyes. It was mocking me, or perhaps it was just calibrating, learning the frequency of my fear. Then, a bang that was deafening, a sudden thunderclap of metal hitting concrete that shattered the creature's focus.
Oh, shit!
Bo's voice roared from the direction of the loading docks. It was a real sound, rough, angry, and vibrantly alive. The thing above me didn't hesitate. It uncoiled with a sickening fluidity, its limbs snapping into place like a folding ruler being jerked open. It didn't climb down. It launched itself across the gap between the scaffolding, its claws screeching against the steel. I watched, paralyzed, as the silhouette sprinted through the high canopies of the scaffolding, moving toward the sound of Bo's voice with the speed of a nightmare. I tried to scream. I opened my mouth to heave out a warning, but my throat was a desert. My vocal cords felt frozen together, or perhaps the sheer primal terror had simply severed the connection between my brain and my lungs. I stood there, a silent witness as the shadow of my own voice disappeared into the orange haze to kill the only friend I had left. I didn't follow. God help me, I didn't even try. I turned and ran the other way, my boots skidding on the frost-slicked floor as I scrambled towards Section 5. I rounded the corner of the poultry stacks, desperate to get far away, but I tripped. I went down hard, my palms stinging as they slapped the ice. As I scrambled to get my footing, I looked up. I found Travis. He sat there, propped against the frozen juice pallets, a hollowed-out husk of a man. His chest cavity was splayed wide, the ribs forced open like slats of a discarded crate. The cold had been his only embalmer, flash freezing the wound into a jagged purple bloom of ice. No blood, no mess. It hadn't eaten him. It had disassembled him. I stared into the void where his life used to be. The lungs were missing, and the vocal cords had been plucked clean from his throat. The only sound was the faint, rhythmic hum of his remaining sinew, vibrating against the bone as the cooler fans tried to play a song on what was left of him. I scrambled backward, my boots skidding on the slick, frosted concrete. A wet, jagged sound tore from my throat, but I choked it back. Somewhere deep in the labyrinth of the cold storage, a heavy metallic clack echoed, followed by the frantic, skittering rhythm of limbs hitting steel. It was coming back. I lunged into the narrow gap between two towering stacks of frozen product. The corrugated steel of the shipping crates bit into my shoulders, a freezing vice that demanded I stay perfectly still. I squeezed back until the jagged edge of a pallet dug into my spine, creating a space barely wide enough for a ghost. Then, the metal above me groaned. The heavy racking above me flexed. I heard the rhythmic tink of claws hooking into the industrial shelves. It was directly overhead. I slammed my palm over my mouth, my teeth digging into my hands to keep my jaw from shattering. My lungs were screaming, burning with the effort of holding back a sob. Through the sliver of space between the crates, I saw a shadow detach itself from the darkness above. The thing paused. It didn't breathe. It hummed. It blended so well with the coolers on the ceiling. If I didn't know it was right above me, I would have thought it was just part of the background noise. I knew I couldn't hold it. My lungs were turning to lead, and my vision began to fray at the edges, sparked with static. I looked frantically through the gap, my eyes darting across the dark, frost-rimmed silhouettes of the warehouse.
Rick, are you getting ready for the truck?
The voice hit me like a physical blow. It was Bo. Every inflection, every sharp edge of his tone was perfect, except for the lack of his usual southern drawl. It was Bo's voice, but it was being played through a cold, hollow instrument. Click, click. Directly above him, the sound of my own teeth chattering was mirrored back to me. The thing wasn't just mimicking Bo. It was mocking me.
Should be around here.
The thing whispered. The Bo voice, vibrating through the steel racking I was pressed against. I could feel the vibration of my own spine. It was tasting the words, practicing them. My chest spasmed. I couldn't hold the air anymore. My heart was a panicked bird slamming against its cage, and I knew that the second I exhaled, the creature would drop. Then, I saw it. Through the haze of freezing fog and the tangled shadows of the forklift lanes, a thin, horizontal sliver of crimson glowed, the emergency push bar of the fire exit. It was 40 feet away. 40 feet of open concrete floor where I would be completely exposed. I sucked in one last, jagged lungful of freezing air, my hand still over my mouth. The racking above me creaked as the weight shifted. A long, pale limb, slick and corded with stolen muscle, slithered down the side of the crate, just inches from my face. It was now or never. I bolted. I didn't just run. I exploded out of the gap. As I lunged, a pale, slick appendage lashed out from the racking. It didn't just snag my jacket. It hooked into the meat of my shoulder, a row of needle-sharp protrusions shearing through fabric and skin. I felt the wet tear of my own anatomy, a flare of white-hot agony that felt like a brand against the sub-zero air. I screamed, and a heartbeat later, the thing screamed back. It was my own voice, distorted and wet, echoing the exact pitch of my terror. I didn't look back. I fueled the sprint with the iron taste of blood and the adrenaline coursing through my veins. The thing was a storm of thrashing limbs and clicking joints behind me, a heavy, rhythmic thudding that gained on me with every stride. I threw my entire weight into the fire bar. The door didn't just open. It surrendered. The alarm shrieked, a piercing mechanical wail that shook my eardrums. Then the world changed. The freezing, sterile vacuum of the warehouse was swallowed by a wall of thick, humid southern air. It hit me like a wet blanket, smelling of damp earth and diesel. I stumbled a few yards into the gravel, my lungs hitching as they tried to process the sudden heat. I spun around, clutching my ruined shoulder, expecting the nightmare to be mid-leap. It stood, framed in the doorway. It didn't step into the heat. It just loomed. Its neck was an impossible, telescopic length of harvested sinew, stretching up into the shadows above the doorframe. In the face, there was no Beau, no Travis, no me. There was only a singular, bottomless hole where a soul should be. A hollow intake valve for the world. It didn't have eyes, but I knew it was memorizing me. I buckled, hands on my knees, coughing up the last of the freezer's frost. I glanced at my watch. 3:36 a.m. The numbers blurred through my sweat. When I looked up, the monster was gone. The dark doorway was no longer a mouth to a tomb. It was flooded with a sudden, violent beam of the primary lights, that pure white glow. I stared into the empty doorway, realizing too late that the hole in its face wasn't for eating. It was a vacant socket, perfectly shaped for the parts of me that it wasn't able to get.